Hello everyone, welcome to a fabulous episode of This Week in Mormons. We're so happy you're here. What a great time for everyone. It's March, it's the first day of spring, and I'm in a basement with a blanket around my person because otherwise my hands would be cold. I am joined this week by none other than Kurt Frankum of Leading Saints.
I'm back, Jeff, and man, springtime is upon us, and it's beautiful outside here in Utah anyways.
Yes, well, the Deseret does mean beautiful honeybee, as everyone knows.
That's right. Beautiful honeybee.
Yep. That's the exact word.
How have you been, Jeff? What's new in your world?
Not too shabby, my friend. Let's see. I'm trying to think. What is new in my world? The newest thing in my world is the exciting world of home renovations. It's getting real. So that's sort of that's been consuming my life of late. Yep.
You're living the American dream here, Jeff. I am. What are you doing to the home?
Oh, this and that. We're gussing up the kitchen a little bit. I've started finishing out some unfinished parts of my basement on my own. It's just a big mess. It's great.
Finally getting that.
As you can see.
Finally getting that. Yes, I see it.
You can see behind me a number of boxes and items and things because everything's crazy. That's been my, it's consuming me, truth be told.
Are you finally getting that theater room you've been dreaming of?
Sure.
It's not one of those renovations.
I'll just be like, honey, here's what we're going to do. Forget the other stuff in the basement. Let's unfinish the finished part so I can convert it into a theater room with no windows.
Your man cave, Jeff.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to stream some sweet 128-bit audio.
Boom.
Really high-end stuff.
Movie night at the Open Shaws.
Only audiophiles would get that joke. Maybe Kurt does. I don't know. You outsource most of your audio production at this point.
I do. I hate editing audio, Jeff, so I'd much rather somebody else do it.
Well, that's fine.
Than me.
So you know, we're hanging out. You know, weather's finally getting better, and March is upon us. I'm excited for conference in just a couple of weeks. It's crazy. It's already here.
And I love spring conference. There's a little bit extra just like excitement about it. I feel like we're going into spring and the summer, and it's not like dreary winter. And so, yeah, I love spring conference the most. If I had a favorite conference, it would be spring conference.
Are you bummed that, you know, we're going to have priesthood meeting again this time around? It's back.
Yeah.
After we got it off for the first time in 150 years or whatever last October.
Yeah, because now I'm only getting my ice cream night once a year. So right, I take it when I can get it.
Yeah.
Do you do anything after the priesthood meeting?
Do I do anything after?
Do you have a tradition?
Let me walk you through the evolution of Brother Openshaw in priesthood meeting. For most of my life, when I was a young man, a teenager, my uncle would always take me to priesthood meeting, and he'd take me to dinner afterwards. In California, you're done by 7 p.m., so you know, you just go to dinner or something. And that was lovely, and as I got older, I did that with my dad and my brother. We'd do this and that. College, I don't remember anything. I don't know. And then a number of years ago, they decided to do the right thing and start streaming priesthood meeting online. That was a big change for me, because rather than do anything, I sat on the couch with my wife eating some pizza or whatever, probably nothing because it starts at 8 p.m. on the East Coast, and just enjoyed streaming it. Then I was called as an Elders Quorum president, so I was like, all right, I'll toe the company line a little bit here. I'll be a good soldier. And I started attending, and not only that, organizing events. And out here, since it's so late, you usually do stuff beforehand. That's more common. So we would usually, you know, you get together like a Five Guys or something and have some burgers and shakes and then go to priesthood meeting. That was kind of the tradition.
And then fall asleep with the sugar crush.
Yes. I have one memory. I actually went into the steak center, and I'm just sitting there in the overflow with a Five Guys shake. Just sitting there, like sipping it while I'm watching priesthood meeting. It was a great evening for me.
Just own it, man. Yeah.
And then I got released as an Elders Quorum president, and I haven't gone back. So that's my evolution of priesthood. I will most likely be watching it at home unless I decide I want to socialize with the brethren in my ward. But I've already tried that, and it hasn't really had any success. So why try again? I'm good.
Do you get the sort of passive aggressive guilt trip from local leaders? Like, hey, you know, we are broadcasting at the Steak Center, it would be great if you came, or anything like that?
It's a mix. I haven't seen anything of it yet this time around. Not even, or nor a mention of, you know, ice cream beforehand or a meal or whatever. I don't know if that'll be happening or not. They are running out of time. I mean, that's
one more Sunday.
We're less than 2 weeks out, and it's a fifth Sunday, so it's even harder for messaging.
Oh, yeah.
And now we don't have priesthood meeting every week. They had it last Sunday, and they said nothing about it.
Yeah. So do you think that's, at least in our United States experience, that's going to go away as far as the broadcasting?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the broadcasting's been going on now for a while now. Probably, I mean, I think we've had the broadcast now for like 5 years or so at this point, right? It's been a good stretch. And I think plenty of people still opt to go in person and have that experience. Even though I'm a chump and I watch the broadcast at my house by preference, I've even assumed when my sons are older, I'd actually prefer to take them in person and make it like a thing that we go and do together to make it more eventful and meaningful. So I don't know. I don't think it's going to die. I'd love to hear from our listeners about that one, though. But I still feel like a lot of people go. But I did have that. When I was Elders Quorum president, that was also in part because the stake presidency was really pushing, like, all right, everybody, this is all nice and well and good, but let's be together as brethren. And I said, all right, fine. I will lead if I must. So that's nice. All.
Well, yeah, what definitely traditions related to General Conference they're adjusting for many people. I mean, with the, you know, the Twitter happening for many people, that's sort of become a thing. And
hashtag General Conference only works because Twitter doubled their character count. If they would have kept it at 140, this would have been a disaster.
No go.
LDS Conf is much shorter, and you would waste a lot of valuable space.
Lost a lot of baptisms over that one, but luckily they expanded. So. Cool.
Yeah. So since we're on conference, anything I should ask you how you're doing. We never got to that. But since we're on conference, you can tell us afterwards. What's the scuttlebutt? What do you hear? What's going to change this time around? Man. Are we expecting more sea change in the church? Or can we just finally settle in and have a quote-unquote normal general conference?
You know, I think there was a shift. You know, again, I'm not in these meetings. I don't hear anything.
Right.
I'm just
because everyone
just guessing
that.
Here. But
sure.
Right. But I think like the last time, the last conference in October, it was so distracted by the rumor mill and 2 Hour Church. Mm-hmm. And
which came true. So,
right. Yeah. And I think what they've learned is, well, why don't we spread these out across Fridays in between conferences? And then, yeah, we can still address them, but it's not going to be like, oh, they did. They announced it. There it is. And I don't know what anything else was mentioned, but wow, here's the announcement, you know?
Okay.
Because it seems like...
You mean how we've received a lot of letters of late or...
Yeah, yeah. Seems like every few weeks we get the Friday drop, and I think that will take place. I'm not expecting, at least I'm sort of hoping, I just want the good old conference where we go, we hear some great talks, and we talk about those talks, and we redigest those talks, and it's wonderful, rather than like, okay, now, so what do we do now, and how will that work, and when does it start, and you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, so much of last October was, well, it's based in doctrine and revelation and all that. It was administrivia pretty strongly. I can barely remember some of the more just classic conference gospel focused talks because so much time was devoted to all the other stuff and it just kind of took the air out of the room for anything else. So I too would welcome a return to normalcy. But as far as rumors we hear, the biggest one I've heard about, I can't fathom how this would actually occur, is that the word of wisdom will be amended. Have you not heard this? This has been going around.
I've heard it, but man, some of the rumors I hear, they're sort of, I mean, not that that's like super out there, but man, that would be monumental, right?
Well, it would depend on how you define it as not monumental. I mean, yes, when the word of wisdom was received, it wasn't... as essential, I guess you could say, as it is now. You know, that it wasn't part of a temple recommend process. It was more, like, to paraphrase the Pirates movies, more a set of guidelines than actual rules, right? But now it's rules, and we strongly identify with all that. That would be crazy, because, I mean, think about this, Kurt. If in 2 weeks, President Nelson gets up there and says, you know what? You're good. Have your coffee. Would you go to a Starbucks and say, Tell me about this Frappuccino. Tell me more.
Right. Man, that would be, it would probably take me some time for sure. I mean, or if I would even go that way, because it is so ingrained in my
right?
in my personal theology that I don't know. But
well, when you think about it, the main reason I think they can't do it is purely financial. Because as Latter-day Saints, since we pay our tithing, if you're a good Latter-day mm-hmm. Saint, if you don't pay your tithing, stop listening now. You don't belong here. But you pay your tithing, and
he's kidding, okay, guys,
I'm kidding. But we pay tithing, but we don't drink or coffee. Basically, other people spend most of their money. I'm going to assume they spend 10% of their money on alcohol and on whatever else. We make up for that with sugar and tithing. We can't be tithed and buy booze because then we'd lose 20% of our income and we'd all become financially insolvent. That's not provident living, ladies and gentlemen. They're not going to teach that in the self-reliance
I didn't even
class.
Consider this financial approach, this perspective of it, Kurt, interesting.
Kurt, if you take a more pragmatic, tangible approach to things, you'll see what really goes on behind the scenes with Revelation. I'm pretty sure about
right?
this.
Right. So if they did amend the word wisdom, would they only remove things from the do not list, or would they add things to the do not list?
I like that we're deciding this. Well, Kurt, you know, as the past has shown, the only thing I would hope for is that instead of any of that, they put more emphasis on the things you should do. Like,
right.
Like President Nelson straight up gets there and says, well, the word of wisdom matters, everybody, but we're always focused on the stuff that is proscribed. I want to talk about how you need to be better about like not eating. Like, we have an obesity issue. We have diabetes. We have all these issues. Like, we need to take better care of our bodies. That would be a cool conference talk.
We must run a half marathon at least once a year. That is part of our play.
That's a new part of our doctrine, I guess. If it's word of wisdom, it's doctrine then. We're straight up amending Doctrine and Covenants 89 or interpreting it, as it were. I don't know. That'd be funny. The thing I love about rumors like that is if that were true, especially something like that, even two-hour church is mostly administrative, so I could see how that got out there somehow. But straight up amending scripture or other, you know, something as strongly identified as Mormon culture in essence, who would know about that at that high of a level? Because I'm assuming it drops after 15 individuals who'd have a clue that would be coming. Uh-huh. Who would be leaking that out? That's what I mean. We know it's Elder Cook, but really, who would be leaking that out to everyone for somebody to get this idea? Otherwise,
and it probably. So, would you think it would be leaked out by now? Or are these rumors because of that?
I mean, they're always rumors, but I just want to know where these things get started. I wish you could find the root, true. The kernel of one of these rumors, because if you were to trace it all the way back, I'm like, I don't think anyone in the 12 or the first presidency or maybe the presidents of the 70 is just kind of casually saying to a guy at Carl's Jr., hey, by the by, see that coffee you're selling? That's going to be legit in a month and a half. And from there, it flourishes. I mean, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Any other rumors that are worth mentioning, Jeff?
What else have I seen?
The center of the rumor mill.
We hear a lot about changes to Mutual. I mean, Mutual's going to change anyway once scouting goes away, but other changes like to align it more with seminary even, and we'll talk a bit more about seminary later on. So I've heard that. And...
But we'll probably get the detailed talk from Elder Rasband or somebody about the changes now that scouting's going away, right? Like, here's the booklet. Here's what the picture looks like on the front, and here's our goals with it. Right?
I mean, so much of the church already hasn't had scouting, so I feel like we just have to embrace what they've been up to and just move on with our affairs. What I have found curious, at least in my unit, is they're almost doubling down on scouting while we still have it. Like, straight up saying, like, calling more people as cub leaders and things to try to power some kind of sprint to the end, I guess. I don't know what it's about.
I
was like...
I would say that is atypical in the church right now. That I think people are
agree.
They've already phased it out and they sort of just give it lip service and move on.
Oh no, we still have people doing Eagle projects and the church and the ward's putting all of its weight behind it. And I'm all right, whatever.
Yeah,
good on you. Well, have you heard any other random rumors in your circles? There's a couple other ones, but I'm not remembering at present.
You are my circle, Jeff. I
don't know how this is possible given what you do.
I did read somewhere that one rumor is that which applies to my organization a lot, that there will be a more formal approach to church leader training.
Well, that's
which
I could see that
welcome.
I could see that not being a conference thing, but I could see that happening.
Yeah.
That seems more like another Friday release. You know, hey, here's what's going to happen. We're changing stuff for bishops. We're going to have, well, they should have as a hotline. we don't want to get too like polemic here, but do you think there should be something like a hotline for members who feel that they receive unfair treatment from leadership? Because you read this in blogs and such. I believe the people who write it, because we're fallible individuals and leaders might be imperfect, but you also read about some pretty frustrating stories. And I wonder if
that would be interesting. If there was a hotline as far as how it would be used. But in a sense, I mean, in theory, there is a hotline. You know, they tell members they can go to their stake president or even writing letters. Even they say don't write a letter. Like, as a bishop, I received a personal phone call from President Oaks one day because of a letter. Well, it was about me, but...
And he said, why are people not contacting them? Why am I getting this, Bishop Frank?
He was like, he was very like kind and sincere of wanting to help this member, wanting to understand the situation. And what I explained to him is that this member lived in a care center, almost like I wouldn't call it a halfway house, but that treated people for mental illness. Okay. And she was... definitely had some serious mental illness. Yeah. And once I explained that to him, he's like, oh, okay, well, do you think there's anything else I should follow through with this? And I said, nope. And then I invited him to my ward sometime. And then that was the end of the conversation.
And he never showed up.
Came. So it's all right. They only give visit those wards that are in trouble, as I've heard.
I guess so. That's kind of funny. Now, given this, Kurt, do you know how to contact the Brethren directly? Because we hear all the time, you know, it's this classic dichotomy in conference where we see do not email the Brethren with your concerns. Don't write letters. Talk to your local authorities. But then they go on and they read letters and anecdotes to illustrate points in conference, thus validating the concept of writing them directly. But I also want to know where everyone's getting their email address, because it's not like they list it online, like under the Contact Us page at churchofjesuschrist.org.
I think it's typically through letters. But I would say if anybody is planning to write a letter, you better write it with the assumption that your bishop will someday read it, because whether they respond to it directly themselves, they do forward on to local leaders. And I did have a few instances where I got those letters and was asked to approach this member about it. And one member in particular was completely embarrassed that the letter made it onto my desk. Not that it said anything about me specifically, but she really did intend it to be for only President Monson's eyes only. But that's just, you know, he can't respond to it. And it got forwarded to me as the bishop. So just if you do write that letter, know that, okay, am I willing to also have a conversation with my stake president or bishop about what I'm writing?
I also have a good suggestion. Now, from what I've seen from other church employees before, the typical email format, everybody, is last name, first initial, second initial, at thechurchdomain.org. So I encourage you all to do oaksdh@churchofjesuschrist.org. And just tell me what happens.
You're going to get a phone call from President Oaks now. This is not going to end well.
I would love that. We'd have a great chat.
I apologize I gave away your email, but hey, how are things?
I'm just doing guesswork. Maybe they have something more cryptic.
It's true.
To get to theirs. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Anyway, this far in after some conference stuff, I think we'll do some temple predictions. We'll bring those up probably next week. We're still working on our final thing.
All right, I'm just going to give my temple prediction. All right. West Valley City.
I have actually heard that.
My hometown. We need a temple. There's a beautiful place about, 5,300.
First of all,
5,300 West.
You can't use that adjective in West Valley City together, but continue as you were.
Yeah. I'm really praying for a West Valley City temple.
Mm-hmm. I have actually, I've seen that bounce around a bit based on the way the stake structures are right now and some of the demographics. It's a possibility.
You're giving me hope.
Instead of that,
you're saying there's a chance.
Some have called for a temple actually all the way over in Magna instead. That way it could pull from Tooele a bit better, because Tooele is actually pretty. Some people have called for a temple in Tooele. Tooele.
I could see that.
People have called for that, but that would pull a lot away from Salt Lake. So the rumor you hear about this, and I hope this never happens, is that there's potential they could do away with live endowment sessions, which are only done in the Salt Lake and the Manti temples, and that's it. And if they did that, it would require fewer temple workers, which makes sense. You have to have a lot more involved for a live session, and thus it would free them up to assist in other temples, such as something like a Tooele temple. where there are lots of temple workers that come from out there, you know, west of the Salt Lake Valley.
Yeah.
Instead. But I feel like losing the live session would be just really, 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 really sad. I keep worrying that they're going to do it to Manti. Like, they'll leave it in Salt Lake, but they'll tell Manti, like, hey, look, you've been kind of going rogue on this one for a while.
There's only 50 people left in your town. We've got to cut this off.
Right? I think it's one of those wonderful, yeah, like,
it's a beautiful part of our history.
Yeah. And I think you learn different things about when you do the endowment when it's live as well. I know I do. Yeah. I think it's awesome.
True that.
So I'm hopeful for West Valley City for you, my friend. I'm gonna pull one for Orem.
Ooh, Orem. That sounds like one of those that's expected, but
there's actually less exciting, there's like 23 stakes in Orem that feed into the Provo Temple. So and that with this movement towards some smaller temples, I don't think it would be.
There would be an audible hoot and holler in the conference center if that was the case.
But as long as we're sticking,
and I hope we can get away from that. Like, can we just take the announcement and not suddenly turn into a rock?
Well, why don't you blame NelsonRM at churchofjesuschrist.org, because he clearly relishes the experience of doing this. He knows he's got everyone eating out of his hand, and he's just like, partay, this is fun. I've also heard about Heber. I could actually see the Heber Valley area getting one. That would kind of make sense. You don't have much in the way of Park City because they are godless communists, but everywhere else, you know.
True that.
That could happen. Before we do more direct news, Kurt, how are you? How is Leading Saints? Plug stuff right now. This is your plug moment.
Leading Saints is great, and I want everybody to know that I'm so excited for some upcoming things happening. We've done these virtual summits in the past, which is essentially just a virtual conference, an online conference that you can attend wherever you're at. We've done one on motivation, one on teaching. And now I've got like 90% of it recorded. We're just finishing up. We're doing Questioning Saints, where it's a well-rounded resource to help leaders or anybody that interacts with individuals who've maybe gone through a transition of faith or have been questioning and how we approach that. Uh-huh. And for example, I interviewed some parents and then their son and his wife. The son has left the church, and his wife has left the church as well. And sort of the ups and downs they went through of maintaining their relationship, and it is a phenomenal discussion.
Oh, so you mean the very podcast I published about 2 weeks ago with another couple?
Because you did not have their parents, their Orthodox parents, on there as well. So this will be
content.
And I'll definitely plug your interview, which was fantastic, which I will include to the audience that comes to the Questioning Saints summit.
Yeah, you're good.
But anyway, so if you want more information about this, you can go to leadingsaints.org/questioning, and there'll be more info there. But we haven't launched it all, and for another week or so, where you can register and things. But it's free as you watch it day to day, just like if you go to a conference, you would see it online. And it's going to be – there's some phenomenal discussions with Elder Hafen and Adam Miller and Anthony Sweat, and anyway, some awesome – interviews.
Good, all man. Right. I love the stuff you do, Kurt. I know I tease you because we have a fun relationship, but I have like mad respect for Leading Saints and all the good work you do there. I have for years.
I'll go on.
And I feel like you have just picked up so much steam in the past couple of years in particular. And you're doing good work, my friend.
I'm living the dream, Jeff. I pinch myself that I get to put this content together and do these interviews.
It's cool, right? Like I wish I could do This Week in Mormons full time. That would be the dream. That would be my perfect job.
And you can go to Patreon right now, folks, and help Jeff move towards that dream.
Yeah. Now a delicious combination of Patreon / Google advertising is now subsidizing our various expenses.
And my wife is now printing things that's coming out the printer in my office, so you get some background noise.
I've got children running around above me, so I hear...
Well, good. I'm glad you know I'm a real person.
I think these joists might collapse. I'm not sure, but here we are. That'll make for some great show.
Nice.
All right. I hinted at it before. Let's talk about seminary changes real quick. I think we've had different experiences with seminary as well, growing up in California and Arkansas, respectively. And so, okay, Kurt's really from Utah, everybody. Joking. So, if you missed it, this came out one of these Friday news drops, which is the thing lately. But this is funny. This is another thing that was rumored. I heard some things going around that seminary was going to change to come follow me. And
yeah, I heard someone say that like before it was dropped, like there's a huge announcement coming out. But this was not.
Yeah.
Huge,
well, it's funny. You see pieces of truth though. Like people said that Elder Holland was going to appear and explain because he chairs the education department, and that he was going to explain everything. That is true. In that on YouTube, the church released like a minute and a half video of Elder Holland just kind of going over the same things that were released. So that did happen, yeah. But just not exactly what was rumored. So what's going on here is beginning in 2020, the course of study for seminary will shift to the annual calendar instead of the school calendar, and they'll follow the same Come Follow Me curriculum that we're doing everywhere else. But you'll still attend seminary following your academic year. So it's kind of goofy. So that means once this gets going, you'll be splitting your academic year of seminary, at least in North America, in different topics. So they're starting this year in June. They're going to switch to the New Testament. That's what we're doing elsewhere. So those attending in the fall will pick up with the New Testament. And then in January, they will switch over to the Book of Mormon. And the main reason they're doing it now is so that we're ready to start the Book of Mormon from the beginning come January. But then you do like half the Book of Mormon and then summer vacation, I guess, when you're in the States. And then you just finish the Book of Mormon on the back end of the year. I have a lot of questions about this structure, but here it is.
Yeah. Well, I think this is definitely welcome because somebody in the Leading Saints Helpers group mentioned the fact that they saw youth that like in their personal progress, they were reading and, you know, trying to finish the Book of Mormon or something. And then in seminary, they're studying another book of scriptures. And then now they come follow me. And there's just, they were everywhere, right? Yeah. So it's hard to create focus, especially in the youth experience, for on what you're reading. And so I love this. In fact, and maybe I'm just not in the stage of life where I have teenagers, but I didn't even consider that this was a thing. And once it was announced, I was like, oh, of course they'll do that. That's great.
I know. I guess I never thought much of it, but I think when we grew up, even a couple of years ago, our whole education in church was much more balkanized. We had what we were learning in seminary. We had our Sunday school class, and then we'd go on to our auxiliaries after that. We could be all over the place with what we were doing, especially when we were kids. Because, I mean, I don't remember what the first year was for the priesthood manuals, because they use the now gone, but, you know, the teachings of the presidents of the church. I actually do not know this. This speaks to my ignorance. Kurt, did they use those in Aaronic priesthood quorums? Did their lesson come from that or something else?
No, I'm pretty sure there was a manual for those.
Okay. Oh, yeah, because they got the youth manuals that they updated a couple of years ago.
Yeah, the youth manuals. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, we're good. So anyway, so this is, I guess it's good stuff. I do admit it seems almost kind of weird because when you're a high schooler, so much revolves around your academic year, not to kind of have this year when I'm going to school, I will be studying the Book of Mormon, just to mix it up. But I understand the purpose behind it. It's to make it stronger when you're also going to church.
And it makes me wonder if they considered like doing it the other way, where they would change the Sunday school manual or Come Follow Me curriculum every September. Mm. But maybe it's easier to change just the youth rather than the whole church.
The one thing we do, just in my stake, and I've never seen this anywhere else, we change our ward times, you know, the three wards that rotate in our building. We do it with the school year. It's always in beginning of September.
Oh,
they shift the time, which I'd never seen before. I don't know how common that is.
Yeah, I've heard of that, but I've never experienced it myself.
Yeah, and I guess they just do it for the kids. I didn't feel like changing church time growing up and when I was going to school was like a major issue with how my academic year went. But
I heard someone mention that, and I doubt this will be the case, but someone asked a question if they'll do seminary graduation at the end of the calendar year, you know? Obviously, December would be crazy, but I know that May is like so crazy for many people that I think most bishops and youth leaders and seminary staff would appreciate if there was a January seminary graduation.
I don't think they'll do that though. I mean, why would they?
No, I don't.
Because they're still following.
It was a question.
During your academic year. It is just kind of funny. I guess just imagine coming back from the summer, or worse, if you move to a new area and you start a new school, and there's continuity, of course, if you're already a member, but you just show up in the fall and you're like, all right, everybody, please open your books. We're going to study Alma chapter 27, just to get going again. It's an interesting structure.
Yeah.
I had wondered a bit about the June change. I understand why we're leading up to it, and the church is international, so it all works out fine. But looking at it in June, at least from an American perspective, it's like no one's in school in June. Why is this changing in June of all times? Like no one's going to say, oh, wow, this was a cool shift this week because they're not there. No one's in school. Some places start as early as August and elsewhere. And internationally, I think it's a bit different. So it's all fine. But I think they could have communicated that better because I saw this and I was just like, why? Why not just do it in July? Or
yeah,
it's a minor thing. Very strange.
But in general, I just appreciate overall like just some of the practical approaches. And I don't know if this is just, you know, this is President Nelson specifically or – but it just seems like as of late, there's just been some – more practical policy adjustments that just make some things easier, you know, like the youth age advancements and things like that. It's like it kind of takes a load off and just makes everything flow a little bit better and makes for a better member experience.
That's what I'm talking about, man. But it's cool stuff. It's going to be great to see what happens with the kids.
So let's really typically Jeff is the one that leads out on the spreadsheets and reimbursement discussions, but I'll take this one, Jeff. As far as the church has gone electronic with their reimbursement process, so if you went and bought the brownie mixes for the board barbecue, Jeff, you would not have to hound the ward clerk with your receipts.
Well, for those that don't know, what is the process? What has the process been before this, though? I think there's a lot of people who have never received a reimbursement from the church. I don't think that's abnormal. So
if you did in the past, if you did buy the brownies for the barbecue, you would then take your receipt for such brownies. You would take it to the clerk. He would then give you a form, which that form had to be invented by every ward individually. And I don't know why we couldn't just have a standard form, but nonetheless, we created there was a form that you'd fill out, what auxiliary, what budget, what's it for, staple your receipt, and then you would put it in the box of the clerk. He would then, whenever he decided to do this at the church in the clerk's office, print off a check after it had been signed by the auxiliary leader and the bishop. And then they'd print off a check, which would need two signatures from the ward clerk and typically the bishop or a counselor. And then you'd have to mail that check or chase that member down to give them the check. So a lot of administrative steps that could easily be done with electronic reimbursement.
And now they've moved it. Now you can only get reimbursed electronically, though, right? They haven't made it so you submit your reimbursal electronically, I don't believe.
Right. So I think
that's still a piece. That is the case. Still a piece of the
puzzle. But that is definitely the more, because some, depending on the ward, you know, some ward clerks are more organized than others, and it can take lots of time sometimes. And some families, when they, you know, pay for the whole food for a youth conference or the trek, that's several hundreds of dollars, if not thousands of dollars, that they have to float until that reimbursement check is issued. So this will be a blessing for many. But the other thing, like for my experience, I lived in when I was bishop, I was in a very welfare heavy ward. And so to me, obviously I don't think there's a way around this, but other than delivering a check. But to me, that cutting the checks was, you know, rent money or that type of thing. One thing they have streamlined that was never mentioned, it was during my time as a bishop, is that when I would refer somebody to LDS Family Services, they would still require me to cut a check and mail them a check. And finally get out to a point and said, hey, do we know that we're all one big entity and we can just transfer that money? And so they started just...
He's like, can I Venmo you? Awesome. Is this cool, man?
Yeah. Venmo, that's the next step, Jeff.
LDS, just at LDSFS, just send stuff away. Yeah, I imagine you had a lot of experience with I did a little bit of this. I was a finance clerk once, but it was at BYU. So we didn't have a lot of reimbursements in that stage, but it happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it took a lot of time. Yeah. But I can't imagine now. I mean, clerks still give up a lot of time, but if you're not doing online if you're doing much less in-person tithing and you're not having to deal with hunting people down for checks, it's giving financial clerks their lives back.
Which I think this leads into a larger issue or a larger concept that's happening is that just the diminishing – callings are just diminishing more and more. Either they're just removing callings altogether or the responsibilities in callings are getting more simplistic. And I don't know where the balance is, but I know individuals, they find so much purpose in even if they are the membership clerk or the financial clerk and they're just going to cut a check, like that's just their way of serving, right? And obviously we can't, you know, stay too archaic in our approaches, but it's interesting to see like that. individuals, there's just less and less for that roles and responsibilities that need manpower, right?
Yeah. Well, it's not to have a political analog, but we talk a lot about, you know, in the United States, blue collar jobs, you know, manufacturing jobs, mm-hmm. those sorts of things. And it's easy to put the culprits here and there, but a lot of it is because of automation. And we're not doing automation in the church, but it is that technology reduces our dependency for actual man hours to get things done. And it is going to be interesting how we do that, because we can't get away with just calling somebody as the, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to think of one that has been done away with this. But even a financial clerk could become less of a thing. It's still important.
Yeah. Well, like ward mission leader is more, you know, absorbed by the elders.
Yeah. I mean, that, yeah. Like that. But as far as the way technology makes us do things, it's different. I mean, like a ward communications chair might still exist, but that's vastly different than it would have been years ago when it pretty much consisted of printing programs. And now you're talking about like, no, you got to do the online newsletter and maybe run this Facebook group for us and do some other. It's just very different. Yeah. But even my calling, like as executive secretary, I can't imagine how much harder this would have been years ago when all I would have had was my white printed up, you know, list of the ward roster and a physical calendar that I'm somehow sharing with the bishop to keep things together. Yeah. Versus now, I just do everything in the Google Docs, and that's fine. You know, we share a calendar, and it's easy. So, and it does.
And you think back,
involve less time for me than it would have 10 years ago. I'm sure.
Yeah, and I know, like in the '80s, like transferring a membership record, like that was a process, right? Like you mm-hmm. print it out, you put it in an envelope, you got to look up the right unit and whatever. And now it's like you can do it in the middle of a Netflix show. You can just on your phone.
Yeah.
Speaking of presidents, Jeff. How about a President Nelson who is throwing a mad party at the conference center? He's turning 95 years old.
I hear good things.
And I think we did this for President Hinckley as well. He had a 95th birthday. And
No, President. Yes, he did. Did he? Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
He died. Wasn't he 97?
He's 97. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, what do you think about this, Jeff? You gonna show up?
Well,
make a special trip?
What is the nature of this party, Kurt? What's happening? What?
Well, there are going to be how do they phrase it? Entertainment groups, performances. I would say. What else, Jeff? There'll be speakers.
Oh yeah,
I'm sure they will sing the happy birthday song.
Well, now that it's not public, now that it's public domain, they can get away with that. That makes sense. Yeah. Technically, when they sang it at President Hinckley's one, I believe they would have had to, you know, pay for the rights for everyone to sing that in the conference center. That was a...
Oh, really?
Probably. But then a judge ruled...
Somebody's getting a check.
Recently, happy birthday is actually in the public domain. So, ha ha ha.
But acclaimed performers and distinguished guests, Jeff. Distinguished.
All right.
They will be responsible for entertaining the masses before President Nelson asked, "Are you not entertained?" This is written in the words of Jeff Openshaw.
Are you enjoying? I don't know why this one. I just feel like I just had to write a sort of tongue in cheek piece about it. I can always
tell the Jeff articles. Just the slight hint of snark, but that's good. That makes you, Jeff.
As if to throw shade at the many Latter-day Saint couples that give a mere few months' notice before their nuptials. The church has revealed that there will be a party for President Nelson 6 months away. How's that for notification? Yeah, I don't know. I have fun with this one. I think it's fine. I guess there's a part of me that sort of laughs at these big prophet celebrations. Like, does it drift into, like, I don't know, like hero worship, that kind of a thing? Does it make sense it seems?
Especially the Instagram generation that we're in, right, where we sort of idolize people we see on the screen. And I'm afraid – I don't think anybody's intentionally doing it or that we're, but it is sort of spill over into that, you know, President Nelson is famous, like, I don't know, other Instagram celebrities, right? And,
he's an influencer. He's got it.
He's an influencer. That's right. But it is interesting. This, I'm afraid that spills over, you know, speaking from a leadership context that, this spills over to, you know, a ward experience or being the stake president or being the bishop, that there's sort of this undue notoriety that comes with it, which obviously they represent keys and priesthood and things like that. But it just gets weird where we're shaking their hand for the wrong reason.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's like we want to love the prophet and all he does. But I could totally see the other side of saying, like, why? Shouldn't we just want him to kind of quietly go about his business and help us be better people?
Yeah. like publish some photos in the paper of him at home with his family blowing out
and
candles.
And say, turn 95. Great. Now let's go about the business of focusing on Jesus and others. And I don't know. But I think it'll be fun. I believe this is the first time. What did I hear? Like, they've done one of these and they've only been president for the church for a year. There was some goofy stat because he's only been church president for 14 months and he's 95.
Oh, yeah.
He's a sprightly 95-year-old, though. I'm always going to give him that.
It is remarkable what we can do. I mean, I have a 93-year-old grandfather who's quite spry, but I cannot imagine him doing the things that President Nelson does.
No, me neither.
It's remarkable.
All right, I'm going to give you a quick mention here because this has to do with our good friends in Utah. VidAngel, a service that I think genuinely works pretty well and is nice to use when I've used it.
Man.
But
those VidAngel days, we won't get those back, Jeff. Those were some sweet
days. It's still
there.
I'd wondered if VidAngel was even in business, actually, a few weeks ago. And then the internet blessed me with news about VidAngel losing the lawsuit that some of the studios brought against it for copyright infringement. If you're unfamiliar with VidAngel, it's a streaming platform, essentially. But, well, it was before. Anyway, we'll get into this. But what they do is they let you filter stuff. You'd go and say, I really want to watch Sicario. But I want to get rid of the R-rated content and this, you know, the violence and the language and such. And VidAngel lets you select your filters as you wanted them to be. They didn't tell you how to judge what was appropriate for you or your family. And then you could queue it up and it would kind of run their little filters through it and say it's ready to go. And then you'd watch the movie. And it worked pretty darn well, actually.
Yeah, it was really good.
It was a good service. Yeah. It was too good because the studios were like, what you doing to our stuff? You don't have anybody's approval for this. And right. So they were sued by Disney and Warner Brothers, all these other, and I think Universal was involved in it too. So a judge came down on the side of the big studios, and they're guilty of copyright infringement, but for only 2015 to 2016. So back then, such a weird model. But what VidAngel did for legal reasons was they owned individual physical copies of the DVD or Blu-ray, if you watched it in HD, that you decided to quote unquote rent. And the way their business model worked was for the consumer was you bought the movie for like $20. You were buying a Blu-ray of Sicario, and then you said, but VidAngel's just going to help me watch it how I want to watch it. And you could filter it and watch the movie, and you could keep it. You could pay the $20 and never give it back. And then you just own a copy of Sicario to edit as you please, you know, pick and choose what you want to do on any viewing. Or you could sell it back to them for $18 or $19, depending on if you watched it in HD or not. And then they would go back to your credit for VidAngel. So basically, you were renting movies for $1 or $2. And they were.
And that was the sweet thing about it, Jeff, is like, it's like, why would I go to even $5 Tuesdays when I could wait a little long and I could watch the movie for
That's even like even watching it in HD. I mean, you're not going to get an HD rental of even if you just want to watch Finding Dory, a rental of it from iTunes or Amazon or Google is going to be $4 or $5. So you can see why the studios took issue with this, even though they were somewhere making money because VidAngel was buying the DVD of the film and then buying it and selling it and treating it just like the olden days when you might sell back your DVDs to Blockbuster. It was kind of the same idea. So the judge said, yeah, that doesn't fly. Now VidAngel has to await sentencing in civil court, which basically means how much they're actually going to owe in June. I don't know how VidAngel is going to survive. They can't just make this dry bar comedy and be a business. So,
Well, but they're still doing, like, you can filter Amazon and HBO,
and that's
right?
why this only applies to what they did a couple of years ago. Now, back in 2017, they kind of came back, readjusted things, and now you can link your Netflix and Amazon accounts. They said HBO Go was coming, but I don't think it ever happened.
Oh, okay.
And you can link them, and so then everything that you can stream by already paying for those services, all right, you're not getting free access to Netflix or anything, you can do the same editing as you want. And it basically, the nice thing is it actually gives you a single interface to scroll through like multi-services, which is kind of cool. I mean, if you just want to look and say, that was, you know, it's like, hey, I can see what I've got on Amazon and on Netflix at the same time. And then, and then set your filters, watch your movies, do what you want. They haven't sued them yet or anything. I don't know how long that can possibly last.
It seems like a pretty solid approach to it, since they're not circumventing the, you know,
but
the producers.
Well, no, not
of
the producers, but they did. They're essentially exploiting the terms of service, the actual code of Netflix and Amazon, to be able to kind of hack in there and do this. And I know, I believe they said they approached both of them about this, and they've had discussions, but they've never received the go-ahead from either one to do it. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
if you're still using VidAngel, good for
interesting
you.
Model and approach.
Good for you.
But
because,
they're paying
for
it.
Yeah, any company that crowdsources its legal fees, you might have to wonder how it's going to be. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're making plenty of money making commercials as well. This is the Harman brothers, and yes, they make like the Squatty Potty and commercials and Poopery and
anyway. All that good stuff. Anyway.
They're not a sponsor of This Week in Mormons, just to
clarify. No, they're not. I mean, we did an affiliate thing for a while there because I actually enjoy the service, but I don't know
how. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the affiliate thing was.
It's like a great service, but objectively, I don't see the good legal ground they're on, you know, so we'll see. We only have a few more minutes. Kurt, what do you want to hit on before we wrap it up?
Oh, let's see. We've already touched on the Word of Wisdom, but I guess there's a study that says hot tea will kill you. It will stimulate cancer cells in your esophagus. Is that what it was?
Yeah, Jeff? That's – yeah. Yeah.
So there you go, folks.
Why is it just because it's so hot? Like it just – is it scald your throat and that's what causes problems?
I guess. I mean, maybe that, just that like sunburns stimulate skin cancer. Maybe the same type of thing is happening. It seems kind of too simplistic. But yeah, I mean, there's – something happening.
A wonderful axiom.
Put an ice cube in your tea, folks.
Some quick mentions. A City Lab, which is owned by the Atlantic Group, does great writings, kind of related to city development and things like that. It's a great, great website. They published a terrific article last week, the headline here says Understanding the New Mormon Temple in Rome. But the original name, as you can see by the URL, is Why Mormon Temples Kind of Look the Same, like an understanding of LDS temple architecture. And that's so it focuses a lot on Rome because of the Rome temple being dedicated. But in reality, it goes in pretty good detail about the history of temples, what they are, why they're shaped the way they are, what the rooms are. They have the cutaway picture of the Salt Lake Temple that you can see at Temple Square in the, the South Visitor Center. It's a good long read. It's very interesting. You can talk about the different styles that it went through and why they came and went and left. And I don't even think it was written by a Latter-day Saint. So that's worth your time, I think. We'll link to that. I'd say go read it. Also, check out our good coverage of Relative Race, everybody. Jeff Borders has been hauling on that. I can't even keep up with him. Everything he's publishing.
That's on BYU TV,
right? It's on BYU TV. Episode 3 of the most recent season just dropped. So it's not too late to get caught up and see people meet their families and have very cathartic experiences, you know, reconnecting with loved ones or connecting with them for the first time because they've had entirely dead, you know, genealogy lines and they want to fill in those gaps and they learn about those things. And the last little plug I'll do here, the mailbox, everybody. The mailbox.
Boom.
Latter-day Saint Video Vault has another post up. And we'll have another one up this Friday. I'm not going to tell you which one. Actually, I will tell you which one it is. It involves a bassoon. If anyone knows what that
is. Oh, the phone call.
The phone call's coming your way at the end of the week, everybody. But for now, go check out the mailbox.
I was going to recommend that.
The mailbox it.
That was my go-to to change up district meeting on my mission. Just wheel out the TV and watch the phone call from the ward library.
You want to play your bassoon.
It's like balloons without
the L. The first time I saw the mailbox, I didn't know anything about it. All I knew is I was like, dude, that's the older brother in Back to the Future. That's all I knew. It's like the one who works at McDonald's in the beginning, and later on, he still lives at home for some reason, even though Marty's fixed everything. He says, Marty.
And then the phone call has the guy from Superman that played Jimmy in Superman.
That's what I meant. That's what did I say the mailbox? Reeves. I mean the phone call. And it's that same one who played Jimmy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh,
I
yeah,
messed
yeah.
up. Uh-huh. The mailbox has
yeah,
some,
oh, yeah, and it's
the mailbox has some old people, and it's a sad woman who dies because no one cares about her. It's a really touching film. But it's still on like the LDS YouTube page. So it's sanctioned by the church. You're streaming it from an official church property if you want to watch it. It's there. Anything else you want to bring up this week, Kurt?
No, Jeff. I just always appreciate the opportunity to give my 2 cents on what's happening.
What is Moses
in
a business? Oh, that's the CNN thing all about the quote-unquote rebranding. Good article.
We didn't get to that, Jeff.
Well, I'll link to it. It's worth a read. CNN got all up on the de-Mormoning of the church.
Yeah, and volunteers were released from jail in Russia, right?
Yes.
So they're home now, or at least one of them is in Idaho continuing his mission.
Oh, so they were released from jail, but they were also deported. They weren't just like released.
Yes,
they
were
released back into
deported.
The wild. Okay.
Yeah. Get out of here, kids. And they just ran.
And the last one I want to hit on just to reference, good old Russell Stevenson, the Mormon history guy, wrote a pretty interesting piece for us all called Whitewashing in the Church and How We Erase the Voice of Latter-day Saints Abroad. He talked about a lot of things, but the basic structure was because LDS Living published an article about member families from around the world, but the member families they focused on were basically expat Americans. They weren't like profiling native members in these areas. It was more like through the lens of others. And he wrote a whole think piece on this that's worth getting into, but we don't have time for it now. But you should go read it. It's very academic. You'll enjoy it. And that's it.
Cool, Jeff.
Well, as Kurt said, there's Patreon, folks, if you want to pledge there. $1 a month. You have $1 a month. Even though, but next time Kurt's here, Starbucks might be okay for you to buy. Don't waste your money on that. Dollar a month on Patreon. Please visit us at thisweekinmormons.com and follow us on Facebook. Engage with the TWIM community. And also Twitter. I guess we'll be there for general conference. Keep an eye out for temple predictions. We'll try to publish that here within the next 10 days or so. And you can sound off on those things. Kurt, thank you for doing Leading Saints.
Yes, I plan to continue doing it. So let's hope for that. And you can subscribe to our podcast the same way you're listening to this podcast, Leading Saints.
Do you have any recent episodes or upcoming episodes that you would particularly like to...
I interviewed Brittany Ellis, who is a gay Mormon, and she talked about how we can better approach and assist the LGBT youth that come to church with us and are there, or you know, whether they're out or not. And it was a fascinating discussion, you know, especially when it gets into the details of, you know, what do you do with at girls' camp, or what do you do at a youth conference, or you know, that sort of thing when there are LGBT youth present. And so these are conundrums that leaders find themselves in that hopefully we've given you some best practices to help you out of that.
Good
so
deal.
That's a good place to start. And it's one of those things I can't remember who I interviewed a week ago, but anywhere you start is a good place to start.
Your most recent episode was called Good, Better, Best of the Addiction Recovery Program. An interview with Brad Barber.
Right.
Brad Barber, the good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, we get in the weeds a little bit for addiction recovery, but definitely one that any leader.
You even talked to Jana Reese. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And Rosie Card.
Millennial Mormons.
Anyway, time is up, everybody. Have a great week. May all of you be well and be holy and be happy. I'm Jeff. This is Kurt. This Week in Mormons is over for the week, but not over in your hearts. Bye.